I'm sure you've noticed, but sometimes change is foisted upon us. Sometimes we go looking for it, and sometimes we get more than we bargained for. Recently, I decided my writing style was as tired and limited as my wardrobe. It was functional, but getting faded and a little colorless, and certainly a little threadbare in the seat. It seemed that no matter what I wrote, an email to my kids, a recipe for a neighbor, a grocery list, everything sounded like a sermon. So I enrolled in a writing class to explore other genres. The first class, last week, was on the craft of writing short stories. The first example given was a very short story, only 202 words, by a Kiwi, Judy Parker, entitled simply The Hat. I couldn't believe it when I started reading it. Sometimes, as you will hear, escaping your native genre is harder than it looks. She wrote, "The priest looked up from the Psalms on the lectern, cast his eyes over the hats bowed before him, feathered, frilled, felt hats in rows like faces. One at the end of the row, different, a head without hat, cat without fur, a bird without wings, won't fly far. Voices dance and song with the colors of the windows. Red light played along the aisle, blue over the white corsage of Madame Dewsbury, green on the pages of the Bible, reflecting up on the face of the priest. He spoke to the young lady afterwards. You must wear a hat and gloves in the house of God. It is not seemly otherwise. The lady flushed, raised her chin, and strode out. That's the last we'll see of her, said the organist. The organ rang out. The priest raised his eyes to the rose window. He did not see the woman in hat and gloves advancing down the aisle as though she were a bride. The hat, enormous, such as one might wear to the races. Gloves, black lace, such as one might wear to meet the Duchess. Shoes, high-heeled, such as one might wear on a catwalk in Paris. And nothing else. As I listened to this story, Pentecost spirited wind whistled and wailed in my ears, and flames flitted and flickered before my eyes. Like seemingly drunken disciples, the story preached a most unseemly and in-your-face faith. Buck naked, tradition, worldly power, patriarchy, hierarchy, and the Orthodox were put on notice by a God definitely out of her box, but wearing a hat. So much for my dreams of escaping my genre. I couldn't help thinking that it is a new Pentecost story for our time, but more on that in a minute. Luke's story is just as unseemly, if not X-rated. His is a story of chaos and disorder. God is running amok. Boundaries are crossed. Taboos are broken. The young's visions and the elder's dreams are being voiced in confrontational language to the established order. The old order is slipping through the fingers of power faster the harder they cling to it. The unpredictable new is in the ascendancy. What was new in Luke's account? Until this time, religion, like politics, was local. It was the product of the culture. It reflected the values of the tribe. It gave them a sense of who was friend and who was foe. It played to their fears of the others who were beyond the tribe. It grounded their xenophobia and ethnocentrism in righteousness. It served as the glue that told its adherents who they were and who they weren't. Religion gave people an illusion of living in an orderly and predictable world. Outside the boundaries of their religion was a place of chaos to be feared. Its inhabitants were demonic or subhuman. In the early history of Israel, those who worshiped gods outside the culture were idolaters. Identifying idolaters gave the faithful of the local religion a target for their contempt and hostility, and someone to blame for their disappointment and failures. This wasn't true just in Israel, but in most places until Jesus. Israel was amongst the first to believe in monotheism, but it was Jesus' followers who believed that their God was everyone's God. Universal monotheism was a Christian innovation. Upon reflection, the first generation of Christians came to believe Jesus didn't come just for the chosen people, but for the Syrophoenician woman's daughter, the centurion's servant, and the Samaritan leper. Luke, in telling the story of Pentecost, already knew that Christianity had spread to the edges of the known world and to its center in Rome. It had already transcended tribe and tradition. A religion that included everyone was a revolutionary concept without precedent. A religion of the poor and powerless, without enemy or enmity, and yet inclusive in its membership, was as outrageous as the woman who wore a hat, gloves, shoes, and nothing else. Unfortunately, universalism contains the seeds of its own undoing. On one level, it is inclusive. On another, it cannot tolerate diversity of belief. In its own way, it is no less provincial than the ethnocentric religions that preceded it. This became clear when Christianity acquired power as the state religion of Rome. With power came oppression and intolerance. Belief in a one true religion no longer permitted differences. Those who did not believe in the universal faith were worse than idolaters. They were pagans and infidels. Conformity to religion's expectations became more valued than transformation into the divine image. Anyone who did not wear a hat and gloves was not only a pagan, but a threat to be cast out. It would have been bad enough if Christianity was the only monotheistic faith claiming a monopoly on unique relevance, exclusive truth, and salvation. But as we all know, about 600 years after Pentecost, Muhammad established the third great monotheistic faith, equally committed to universalizing its beliefs. Crusades, pogroms, and jihads were the fruit of the three monotheistic faiths grounded in their common patriarch, Abraham. This 2008 world, now shrunk by the internet, high-speed travel, immigration from places of religious carnage, has put us face to face with Lady Diversity walking brazenly down the aisle. Even in New Zealand, it is inescapable. Even as the church tries not to notice her hat. That diversity has always existed, but now she lives next door. The only thing worse is when she wears a headscarf instead of a hat. Such a world calls into question how we live in community with those we have traditionally vilified as idolaters, pagans, or infidels? The answer is not clear or obvious, but the need to do so for our own survival is. To focus on this issue within the Christian community, there is a growing progressive movement to rebrand Pentecost as Pluralism Sunday. The motive is to transform an exclusive religion into something new, one that holds on to the inclusiveness of Pentecost while retracting exclusive claims to universal truth and salvation. That may sound radical to us, but for most of human history, most religions have not presumed to possess universal truth. The position is not taken out of ignorance of the existence of other religions, but out of a judgment that a specific religion has, at most, a claim on those who belong to the culture in which that religion is to be found. To be born into a culture is to inherit a religion. To be born into a different culture is to inherit a different religion. No one presumes that members of other cultures are inherently deficient. They are merely different. Buddhism and Hinduism have the position that religious diversity is inevitable, beneficial, and necessary because of human diversity. Confucianism, Taoism, and Shintoism hold that except for priests, everyone belongs to all religions, calling upon each one for different needs. The idea of exclusive loyalty to one religion is incomprehensible to their adherents. Past Christian attempts to find a way to pluralism have failed miserably. They have approached the goal by trying to find in other religions commonly held beliefs. The idea being, see, they aren't really different from us. While on a basic human level, this is true, what is really happening is a form of Christian imperialism. Based on their commonly held beliefs, they clearly are just as human and just as wise and moral as we are. They must participate in the same religious universe that we do, even if on the surface their religion seems quite different. Their religion is divine after all, not demonic. See, they are wearing a hat and gloves. Labeling others as anonymous Christians, a label made famous by Karl Rahner, is not pluralism. It is arrogant chauvinism, and it is not worthy of Jesus. True pluralism begins, yes, with tolerance, which is not a virtue Christians are renowned for. But tolerance alone will not get us there. It needs to be followed by curiosity about other religions. As one religious historian, Max Müller, has pointed out, to know one religion is to know none. With curiosity comes appreciation for the other, as well as greater appreciation for one's own tradition. With knowledge and appreciation comes empathetic dialogue, discussing the strengths and weaknesses inherent in all religions. The goal of that dialogue is not to create a new religion born of syncretism, but to improve the ones we have, that each will enrich and inspire us all, no matter which faith we follow. Because of its history and self-interest, I don't think we can look to the institutional church to rebrand Pentecost Sunday. I think it is up to us to be the wind and fire God out of the box. If it is going to happen, we must put on the new hat of pluralism, strip ourselves of the ethnocentrism and chauvinism that cloaks our faith, and walk brazenly down the aisle.